Tarlhurst End podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlhurst End podcast extra in association with the Reading Post for Friday, September the 26th. My name is Dan Wimbush. I'm the editor of thetarlhurstend.com, an independent Reading fan site. And I'm delighted to be joined once again by Get Reading's Reading reporter, Charles Watts. Charles, how are you?
I'm very good, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not so bad, thanks. Start this off right. First of all, congratulations on the new arrival. How have the last couple of weeks been?
Yeah, pretty crazy, to be honest. Thank you very much, anyway. Yeah, pretty mad. I thought I was quite prepared before it all started, but now she's here, I realised I couldn't be less prepared for it. It's been pretty crazy. Very, very nice, very cool, but yeah, pretty mad and very, very loud.
Brilliant. I'm sure it gets easier. At least that's what I'm hoping, anyway, for someday down the line.
Yes, I am very much hoping that as well.
Well, if we move out of that, and you've obviously been off for the past couple of weeks, so you've not been at the games, but it's been an up and down couple of weeks from Reading. I'm sure you've been keeping track from home. Some good wins, and then it's just sort of tailed off in the past few days. What have been your general impressions from afar, and what you've spoken to Jonathan back in the office and whatnot?
Yeah, well, like I said, it's been very kind of inconsistent. Things were going really well until the last week, and then obviously a couple of frustrating results have taken the gloss off it a bit. But I'd still say it's been fairly positive. I mean, look back to the Fulham game, and you know, it was a great performance, great scoreline, a couple of goals on his debut for Glenn Murray, and things were all sort of looking pretty rosy. Obviously, last week at Sheffield Wednesday was disappointing. It sounds like, from what I hear from Jonathan and from people who are at the game, said that it could have gone Reading's way. It was just an edgy game, and obviously the penalty miss proved costly. I think it was a pretty rubbish goal to concede when it deflected free kick. It was the only shot on target they had and ended up winning the game. So I mean, they could easily got something out of that one. It's a bit unfortunate. And Derby, they, you know, much changed side, went up there, had a very good chance by the sound of it to break the deadlock through Jamie Mackie, didn't take it, and Derby, a decent team, ended up sort of coming through and winning it. But I don't think many people are going to lose too much sleep over that defeat. But I think it's the Sheffield Wednesday one that's a bit of a blow, and especially given the chance they had the penalty and didn't take it. I don't quite understand why Glenn Murray took the penalty. Obviously, I wasn't there and didn't see it all, but I heard there was a bit of a barney between him and Nick Blackman. And yeah, for me, if Nick Blackman's on the pitch, he takes penalties. He's a very, very good penalty taker. I know Glenn Murray's older and more experienced, but Blackman should be taking that penalty in my view, and Nigel Atkins should certainly be saying before the game who's going to take that penalty.
Well, exactly. That's what AD Williams brought up on the radio. It's what other people have been saying. You know, surely that list is predetermined before you walk onto the pitch.
Definitely has to be. And I saw the comments from Nigel afterwards. I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it because I haven't seen him since I come back. But I saw some comments from him saying, you know, they're grown men, they sort it on the pitch, and I'm not having that at all. Yeah, because that just leads to that sort of situation where you've got people arguing over a penalty, and when that argument's taken place, that's already ended up sort of psychologically putting doubt in whoever's going to take its mind, because they know if they miss it, they're going to come in for some grief. And, you know, that should just not be a situation that happens. Nigel should be picking before the game who takes the penalties. And then I think the captain should be sort of big enough to stand up and get in that as well. So I'm not sure what Chris Gunter did. I didn't see any of it, but I thought either the manager or the captain should be taking charge of that situation.
Absolutely. Well, it's not been, as I said, not been a bad start to the season. We're in the top half and in sight of the playoffs going into this weekend's game. And we'll come and talk about the Wolves game on Sunday a little bit later on. But just before we, just a quick trip back off the pitch again. And I think this will probably be the final time we're going to bring this up on this podcast. But obviously, since you've been away, big news, the takeover was approved by the Football League. Reading now officially have new owners. And can we safely put this one to bed now? Can we close the issue on this whole takeover lark?
Well, it certainly seems like it. It's all done, confirmed, ratified, boxes ticked. I mean, to be honest, I'm so glad it's over, because it's just everything changes with that. I mean, even at the very last, it suddenly all changed, and you know, someone's suddenly mysteriously taken 50% rather than the four equal owners of 25%. Sam Ritt suddenly disappears. Someone else, his 25% sort of gets absorbed into someone else's, who suddenly has 50% that no one had ever heard of. It's just a totally bizarre situation. I find that it's been a mad sort of process, but it's all done. The league seem to be happy with it, with the way it's gone through. Reading are happy with it. Medeski's happy with it. The Tide's happy with it. And, you know, I think deep down we're all happy with it, aren't we? It's just, like you said, you can just put it to bed now. And there seems to be some financial stability at the club now. We're on a touch wood, a sound financial footing again, and things can move forward. So, you know, I think we're all delighted that it appears for now anyway that we can sort of focus on matters on the pitch.
Absolutely. And a couple of interesting, Sir John's been doing quite the media circuit this week and had some comments in on the Get Reading website today. One interesting thing about him saying that he does expect that the stadium will be renamed at some point if the right opportunity comes along. And the other thing as well is him taking a shoulder of blame for the Zingarevic era. Were you a bit surprised to see him come out and be so open?
I'm probably not surprised, really, because I think, you know, deep down that really hurt him. It was his decision at the end of the day. He sort of talked up TSI and Anton when they came in, you know, said it was too good. He seemed like he was too good to be true. And unfortunately, it kind of was. So I'm not surprised he'd taken some blame for it. I think he, like I said, he'd been very hurt by the last couple of years. It's really taken its toll on him. I mean, he said it was the most stressful year of his life, the last 12 months. And so I'm not surprised. He knows he made a mistake with it, and he didn't mean to, but it ended up being a mistake. I think everyone can see from what happened that, you know, it wasn't a success. And, you know, ultimately Sir John was the person who handed control over to TSI and Anton, and it didn't work. So I'm not surprised he's taken the blame. He's big enough to stand up and accept if he would probably do things differently if he had the chance again. But, you know, as he also said, the line's been drawn under that. Now we've moved on to a different era, and, you know, touch wood this time, he seems happy with who he's found. I know we've heard that all before. We heard the same sort of comments before Anton came in, but he thinks these guys are the right people to take the club forward. They have big plans. They've got the money to do it. So, you know, hopefully, like you said, we can draw a line on over that old Zingarevic here and look forward to a new year under the ties.
Yeah, and I suppose, drawing on your experience of an Arsenal fan, you've got a stadium that bears a sponsor's name. Have you got any real problems or ideas with Medeiros Stadium being renamed?
I don't have any problems with it. It's just what happens. It's modern day football, isn't it? If you can make money out of it, then you're going to sell it. I mean, I know the sort of traditionalists want to keep the name, but I mean, at the end of the day, the stadium itself is named after, it's not exactly like the Reading Stadium or named after an area. Again, it's named after a rich guy who sort of, you know, owned the club at that time. So I haven't got a problem with it. And I deep down, I can't imagine many Reading fans are going to have too much of a problem with it.
No, I can't say I'm too attached to the Medeiros name on the stadium. And besides that, the stadium tends to go by what it's always been known as. I mean, it's a bit different when it's a brand new stadium. But, you know, I think fans will always call it the Mad Stad or Medeiros. It's, you know, even if it becomes the Coca-Cola Bowl or whatever it turns out to be. Yeah.
I can't imagine it's going to be called anything but the Mad Stad. You know, it just seems it's catchy, it's got a ring to it, and no matter if it comes in and suddenly called the Sing Beer Stadium or some sort, I imagine it will be Thai. You know, I'd be very surprised if it's not some sort of Thai thing that gets a sponsorship. But I think that we're all gonna be calling it the Mad Stad in sort of 10-15 years from now.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, if that money leads to us buying a new striker, a new defender, I don't think anybody's gonna kick up a fuss.
Exactly. I mean, it's just Monday football, isn't it? I mean, we'd love to have the old fashioned names in it, but things move on. If you can make money out of it, people are gonna. That's how the business works, unfortunately. And so I think we're all gonna have to get used to a new name fairly soon.
Absolutely. Well, back on the football front then, this again, it's been an up and down week results-wise. It's been an up and down week on the injury front as well. Just when, you know, you think everything's all, you know, slowly starting to come back, Adam Federici, Michael Hector go down ahead of Saturday's game. Hector's back for Wednesday, but still no Federici. But then Hal Robson-Kanu and Danny Guthrie are back in the fray. Where do we stand on injuries at the moment? Who is available, who isn't going to be available for Wolves, by your understanding?
Well, I think Feds is certainly, they're very hopeful that Feds will be available. I think they're confident that he'll be able to come back into the side. Obviously, Howell's got game time under his belt up at Derby. So did Danny Guthrie. So now I'm fully expecting those two to feature. I imagine Howell probably be on a bench. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see our first sort of pairing of Guthrie and Norwood against Wolves, you know, and that's a real boost to have Danny Guthrie back in the side. I spoke to Jem Carrigan this week, actually, and there was good news from him. He's very much hoping to be back in action by the end of October, so pretty much a month from now. He said he'd be very disappointed if he's not in and around the squad, and that would just be a big boost to everyone to get Jem back. He was back. He went under the knife again a month ago, had a bit of an exploratory op just because his knee swelled up after a training session. Everyone got a bit concerned, but the surgeon went in, had a look around, said it was all fine. and it only put him back a couple of weeks having that process done. So he's very hopeful of getting back at the end of the month, which would be great. And I think Danny Williams is around that same sort of time. And so when you look at those two coming back, and you got Oliver Norwood and Danny Guthrie in there, and then, you know, don't even think about Hope Appiah and Aaron Cole. There's some serious competition for those central midfield places when they're all back available. So I think slowly but surely we're seeing positive news on the injury front. Even Stephen Kelly's come back and has got some game times for under-21s this week. So he possibly will be involved, I imagine, from the bench on at the weekend as well. So whisper it quietly, but slowly we are beginning to hopefully sort of see the light at the end of the tunnel in terms of the injury crisis as a plague. I think that's the right word, plagued Reading since the start of the season.
I know Nick Hammond came out a few weeks ago and said they were open to exploring the loan market. Do you expect to see Reading do any business before the loan window shuts in about a month's time?
I certainly was expecting it, having spoken to Nick at that time. But I'm quite surprised that they haven't yet, to be honest. I thought they would have done it by the time I got back from paternity leave, but obviously not. I suppose the fact that the injured players are slowly beginning to drip back into the squad now might make that make it a little less sort of urgent. But I still think defensively they could probably do a bit of cover, certainly on the left hand side, maybe a defence. I mean, I certainly want Jordan to be playing left back. I don't want him central midfield or left wing. I want him left back. It's his best position. But I think he could do with a bit of cover. And obviously Anton Ferdinand, unfortunately for Anton, had his little sort of hamstring pull just as he was nearing full fitness. So I still think defensively maybe a little bit short, but other than that, you've got G-Mac coming back at the same sort of time as Jem and Danny, hopefully. Yeah, I mean, you look around the squad now and you think, is there much need to go into that loan market other than really possibly that sort of defensive area just to give a little bit of cover to maybe Jordan or the centre-back? So it's possibly a little bit less pressing than it was, but I still wouldn't be surprised to maybe see one defensive head come in.
Yeah, I still wouldn't mind them trying to invest in a striker or a forward player with some real genuine pace.
Yeah.
Because I still think that's one area that they're slightly lacking. I mean, I'm not saying the likes of Nick Blackwell are particularly slow, but there's no one with that dynamic pace that can come on with 20 minutes to go against a tired defence and really stretch it. So I think that maybe, I still don't think they've got the battery of strikers to really be a top two side. But, you know, yeah, as you said, otherwise they have got a lot of strength and depth, and it's otherwise just the centre backs really.
And yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it's been a long running talking point, isn't it? The lack of pace up front, and teams can sort of play a high line against Reading and kind of know that they're not going to get caught by the sort of ball down the side and someone nipping in behind them or down the channel. So, yeah, I mean, it could be an option. The fact that they've brought in Cox, Mackie, obviously Murray now as well. They've got Pav. Nick Blackman, I'm just not sure Nigel will do that. He's got so many options now going forward that I think they'd look at it and maybe would it be worth the money or the wages? But I just think I wouldn't be at all surprised if he's quite happy with what he's got attacking wise. But like you, I've long been calling for a little bit of pace, but I don't know. I've got a feeling he might be settling with what he's got going forward.
Yeah, and I suppose his previously successful teams at Southampton and Scunthorpe, they never had outright pacey players, obviously the likes of Ricky Lambert and Hooper and whatnot, and they were never dynamically quick, so I guess it's just maybe just not the way he likes to play. But
no, and I think with his passing as well, he likes, when he talks about sort of fast pacey football, I think it's more sort of speed of thought and speed of passing that he likes rather than actual out and out sort of raw pace of the players. He wants more ball move quickly and the team to be playing that way, and I think there has been an improvement this season. I think they are moving the ball quicker, and there does look to be a little bit more sort of pace about the side, certainly from before I went away anyway. And although I totally agree sort of legs wise the pace isn't quite there, but I do think you're slowly sort of seeing the ball moved around quicker, and maybe they're beginning to look a little bit more threatening. So we'll have to see how it goes, but like I said, there's still sort of a month to go before the loan window shuts, so it's plenty of time to do some business
indeed. And if results pick up again, I mean, what's the need to disturb a settled side? And that process of getting back on track will start on Sunday as Wolves come to the Medeiros Stadium live on the TV. A nice early kickoff for us so we can get off and watch the climax of the Ryder Cup.
But
Wolves have been flying, you know. After a couple of seasons of real misery for them, they went all the way down to League One. They won it quite comfortably last season. They picked up where they left off. They're up to third. I think they've only lost once this season. So, you know, it's going to be a tough game. It's not going to be easy.
It's not going to be easy, no. I mean, they come in flying. I think they're unbeaten in six now, won four of those games. The thing with Wolves, you look at the stats, and they've only scored eight goals, I think it is. They're the lowest scorers in the teams in the top half of the table, but they've got the best defensive record. I think they've only conceded three. So you sort of look at that and think it's going to be a tight game. They'll try and, you know, they'll keep it tight at the back and try and nick a goal. I think they've only scored more than one goal a couple of times so far, so they're not exactly free-flowing. And their striker, Dicko, I see, is out of the game with a hamstring problem that was announced today. So maybe they're going to be a little bit light going forward. So I think it certainly represents a difficult game for Reading, but it's a game they can certainly win. And no, I fancied them to get a result against Wolves, I've got to say.
Just one point then, just quickly referring back to the injury. I know she mentioned you think we might see Guthrie and Norwood paired together. It's not an obvious pairing, given that neither are particular ball winners. No. Do you think that's the direction Adkins is going to go?
I wouldn't be surprised if that is the way he goes on, certainly on at a weekend. I'm not quite sure who else. I mean, maybe like for a ball winner, he might look at someone like Hope or, you know, maybe Cooley. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see Norwood and Guthrie. If Guthrie's fit, I think Guthrie will play. If he's fit to start, he'll start him. And I can't see him not playing Norwood. So I think that'll be the side. You'd have those two, you know, probably Mackie, Cox and Blackman behind Murray up front, with those two kind of holding. And so I think that'll be the team.
Okay, fair enough. Well, then let's get on to the score predictions. I mentioned on the main edition of the podcast earlier this week that you are currently well up there at the top.
Am I?
Prediction standings this year, yep. One slightly suspicious. We did mention that your prediction about the Fulham game came in after full time. So Westy was questioning it. But I've stuck by you. I've stuck the result in. I've said you're a man of integrity. And we're letting it stand. But you are top of the prediction standings at the moment. So with that in mind,
I can't take credit for that. That was a complete jokey tweet sent an hour after the full time.
I thought you were honestly giving me what you thought before the game.
I did not think you were going to actually take that seriously. No, I can't take credit for that one. That was that was supposed to be a joke. I wouldn't want to take points for that one.
Scandal. What would you have said then?
I'm not sure. I don't think I would have said. I don't think I would have said 3-0. I think I would have said Reading win, but I'd have probably.
Okay.
I can't imagine.
We'll amend the scorecard. It's very honest of you. Very honest. Honest Charles, I like it. Okay, well, with that in mind, we'll tweak that. But you're still up there then. What is your prediction for this Sunday?
Well, in the paper, I actually went for 2-2, but I'm changing that now because at that time, I'd spoken to the Wolves reporter and he thought that Dickie was going to play, but I've obviously seen now that he won't. So I think Reading are going to win 2-0.
2-0 Reading win. And I'm going for a 2-1 Reading win. So that spells doom for everyone, guys. Get straight down the bookies and put money on the opposite because... We don't have a great record for the two of us both predict success, so oh well, we'll have to see. But that just about wraps us up this week. Will you be web chatting again on Wednesday? You're back fully in the swing now?
Yes, I'll be back. I'll be web chatting Wednesday, although I'm not actually going to Leeds, I've got to say, next Wednesday night. Jonathan's kindly filling in for that one as well. It's going to be the last one I'm going to miss, just because obviously things are still pretty fresh around here with a baby and a whole trip up to Elland Road and leaving the missus all day and all night. It's not ideal, so I'm going to miss that one, but I will be web chatting that afternoon while Jonathan's making the long trip north.
Yeah, but bearing in mind, obviously, there is that Wednesday game, and I don't think we'll speak before then. I might as well quickly then get your prediction for the Leeds game as well. Obviously, it'll depend on this weekend, but sticking your neck out for the Leeds game.
Is that going to be their new manager's first game at home? I'm not sure if Leeds are at home this weekend or not.
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
I couldn't think. So if it is their first game at home, I think it might be quite tough for Reading, obviously, that new manager syndrome and all that. I will go for a draw on that one. I'll have a 1-1.
Yeah, Leeds are away at Brentford this weekend.
Oh, they say it will be his first game. So, yeah, and I think it will be quite a tough one. Obviously, the fans will be up for it under the lights at Elland Road. I'll go with a 1-1.
Yeah, I think Reading have been fairly, not lucky, but they've had the rub of the green at Leeds in recent years. I think that luck is going to run out. At least Joan Carrishan won't be playing to get injured. So I'm going to go for a Leeds 2-1 win, I'm afraid. So there you go. So if our predictions are anything to go by, we'll lose on Saturday and then win on Wednesday. So stick that in your coupons. But Charles, thanks very much for joining us.
No worries.
Catch up with all of the latest Reading news at the Get Reading website at getreading.co.uk. Well, for plenty more fan analysis and opinion, head over to thetarlesden.com. Don't forget as well to subscribe to the show in iTunes. And also, if you fancy nominating myself and Charles for an award, there's a couple of awards going, and details of that can be found on thetarlesden.com. But until next week, Charles, take care. Ta-da.
Yeah, see you later, Dan. See you.
Bye-bye.
The Tarlehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlehurstend.com.